Part 3. Vendetta. Oft have I heard that grief softens the mind and makes it fearful and degenerate. Think therefore on revenge and cease to weep. William Shakespeare. P-64. Gravesen Hotel, Buenos Aires, Argentina. As Masoud Demir's lifeless hand relinquished its grip of the handle, a foolhardy reporter leapt across the fence and grabbed the briefcase. While others ran in the opposite direction for the cover of their vans, this man stood still for a moment as though realizing that there was no way out from the situation his ill-calibrated fight-or-flight decision-making process had landed him in. He dropped the briefcase almost as quickly as he had picked it up, raising his hands to the security and police officers who were already moving to accost him. Before any reached the man, however, he too collapsed to the ground, courtesy of a sniper's bullet to his brainstem. Three of the four hotel security workers closest to the epicenter of these remarkable scenes fled like the rest of the reporters, while the fourth, and seemingly the bravest, picked up the briefcase. Bluntly revealing a tension that had long been bubbling under the surface, three police officers then crossed the fence and seized the briefcase. Despite the security guard offering no resistance, he was told in no uncertain terms to stay exactly where he was and advised that the only reason he wasn't being handcuffed was to avoid sending an image of disunity to homes around the world via the TV cameras that were still rolling, even as their owners sheltered in the nearby news vans. The man's expression looked like that of someone whose hand had been caught in the cookie jar, and this didn't go unnoticed. To say something wasn't right would have been a colossal understatement when two men were lying dead at the hands of a gunman who could only be stationed inside the hotel itself, and the police officers were naturally suspicious of this man, a security professional rather than a public servant, whose first instinct had been to pick up the briefcase rather than run away like his cowardly colleagues or attempt to protect the rest of the present civilians like the police. The second victim was dead because of a similar instinct, admittedly, but that only made the security guard's action even more suspicious in the eyes of the police. Understandably, they considered it odd that the guard had displayed such inexplicable confidence that the same fate wouldn't befall him for picking up the briefcase as had befallen the reporter mere seconds earlier. After taking a few steps towards the fence, as encouraged by the police, the guard appeared to have a sudden change of heart, but rather than engage in any confrontation, he turned and ran towards the distant hotel and waved his hands, pointing to his own head. Before any of the police officers could give meaningful chase, the guard was dead. He had gotten his wish, silenced before he could be questioned, and the dumbstruck police officers knew then and there that their suspicions had been correct. He was in on it in a way his colleagues hadn't been, whatever it was, and his death would make it more difficult to get to the bottom of a situation that would have been utterly unimaginable just a few minutes earlier. The senior attendant police officer called for backup that was already on the way, and to them, the unfolding storm suddenly made a few ancient carvings seem like the least consequential thing in the world. This wouldn't be the majority view, of course, but the presence of an active shooter in a hotel full of many of the world's political leaders was a threat of a kind these officers had never experienced. The TV cameras on the other side of the fence continued to capture these remarkable moments, but no reporters were brave or foolish enough to venture outside. In-studio guests around the world were already reacting in stunned shock to what they had just seen, and even those viewers who had considered the Dordaloo Tepe hysteria to be overblown were now getting the sense that their world was a very different place than it had been before Chairman Godfrey's disappearance, and none particularly liked to think about where things were going next. The senior police officer crouched down after removing his own jacket and proceeded to respectfully cover Masoud Demir's face. He encouraged one of his colleagues to do the same to the fallen reporter, but stopped short of issuing an order for the same courtesy to be extended to the security guard who had invited his own death for the uncomfortably apparent reason of seeking to avoid his associates and their motives being extracted from his guilty mind. Far more unjustifiably, Masoud Demir had died with guilt in his heart, too. The scene before the police officers was more than enough to tell him that the situation regarding the Dordlu Tepe leak ran far deeper than anyone had previously considered. And they weren't alone at that moment in vowing to do whatever it took to get to the bottom of it and clear not only Massoud's name, but every other that had been implicated. In Birchwood, Colorado, where most of the implicated others were watching on in shock, this feeling was even stronger.